The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show. Yo Mo with David Hayes. Glad you're with us. We're going to have a good one today. Of course, we've had a week and a half of wild rides on Wall Street, so who else better than Hot Rod to call in and give us his perspective on what's really going on. But just as a quarterback for the Green Bay Packers a couple of years ago said to his fan base when things weren't going quite right, he said, relax. R-E-L-A-X. Just relax. So we're going to talk to Rod about how you should just be relaxing. This is actually normal, how the markets are reacting currently, but we're also going to just tell you what we think is really going on and what to expect going forward. So a lot of good stuff here in just a little bit. All right, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got some news of the week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. They announced the inductees this past Wednesday night over at Bobby's Colorado Steakhouse. I was there as well, enjoyed it. It was a great night announcing all of the people that will be inducted at the July ceremony. So we encourage you to check out the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Go over to mcshof.com or just Google Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. All right, the S&P 500, we're going to be talking not about the past week and a half, but just over the last 50 years. The S&P 500 has gained 10.1 per year as percentage points over the last 50 years on average, despite suffering through seven bear markets of at least a 20% decline each time. You know, during the 4 years that Janet Yellen served as Fed chair, the S&P gained over 72% on a total return basis and achieved 156 record highs, or one out of every 6.5 trading days. Now, the Fed is not commissioned to make this market go up. I just thought it was an interesting tidbit. So good job, Janet Yellen. I think you did a good job, and we welcome in the new Fed person this month. If you turn the age 70 and a half sometime in 2017, you're going to have to start taking minimum distributions from your IRAs no later than April 1st of this year. Now, if you delay taking your first withdrawal until April of 18, you must also take a second distribution by December 31st of this year. That comes from the Internal Revenue Service, but also from yours truly. You know, this will end someday. I mean, even with the markets not acting very well the last few days, the U.S. expansion continues. It's now in its 104th month, and if it continues into May of 2018, it will rank as the second largest and longest expansion period for the country in our entire history. Contractions and expansions in the U.S. have been tracked back since 1854. That's over 160 years ago. All right, here we go. We talked about the predictable ages and stages of life and demographics on last week's show. This comes from the Census Bureau. As of the end of 2017, there are more millennials, 83 million of them in the United States, than there are baby boomers, 75 million. Millennials, of course, were born between 1981 and 1997, so they're between the ages of 20 and 36. And while the baby boomers were born between 46 and 64, their ages range from 53 to 71 in 2017. And then interesting, I talked about all of this last week, but in the Wall Street Journal, it says the surprising good news about demographics in the stock markets. Millennials could step in for the boomers in the market, defying conventional wisdom and boosting equities. A really good article about the millennials, you know, and that's why we've talked about the creation of the new starter home as an example. I mean, we went through a lot of examples last week. I hope you enjoyed that. But really, it's pretty easy to figure out what's next when it comes to what people are going to do, what people are going to buy, when it comes to tracking demographics. And then finally, prior to the Super Bowl that happened last weekend, you may have seen it. It was a great game, by the way. Super Bowl 52, the underdog in the big game, it only won 16 of 51 games, but yet have won 6 of the last 10. The Philadelphia Eagles were a 4-point underdog in the football game versus the Patriots. And then, boy, did we get hoodwinked on our coaching deal. Did you see that? I'm moving on. I hope Peyton comes back and coaches the Colts. That's what would be fantastic. And, you know, he'd have a honeymoon period where he could lose all the games for probably a couple of years before anyone would get angry at all. All right, when we come back, it has been a wild ride on Wall Street the last week and a half. We want to talk to Rod when we come back to find out his thoughts and really just to communicate to everyone that this is normal market activity and that we want you to just relax. R-E-L-A-X. Relax. All right, we'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Well, a little wild ride, to say the least, has happened on Wall Street the last, week and a half or so, up and down and all around. But at the end of the day, you might expect that we've had discouraging economic data that came out, right? What else would cause the markets to go crazy or some political drama that spooked investors? But on the contrary, I mean, the drops have come in response to news that seems to be pretty darn positive on the surface. We've had job and wage growth. They're picking up. But analyzing the reaction, I think, at the end of the day, is what we're here to do, and to help keep people calm and in things in perspective. Because, you know, after an unusually calm market environment that we experienced all through 2017, the past week and a half's declines or volatility might feel a little bit unsettling. I understand if you're checking your accounts frequently, but price fluctuations are normal and the economy continues to be strong. Would you please stand up and applaud Rod Holloway? Hey, Rod, welcome to the show. But I'm right on the spot here. I feel like I was going to say, and the state of our union is strong. But, you know, at the end of the day, the state of our economy, it is strong. So people shouldn't be too freaked out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The reality is that there is very little that has changed today as what you had 2 weeks ago before we had this big sell-off. It's changed a little bit, yeah. Interest rates have continued to go up a little bit higher, and they moved rather quickly. And, of course, any time there's a rapid move in the market, regardless of whether you're talking interest rates, stock prices, whatever, you know, that can be a little bit unsettling. We had some wage inflation, in which that came in with the jobs number a little hotter than expected. But once again, it has been anticipated that we would have some wage inflation, and it's been wanted. I mean, we want wage inflation. You want people to be getting raises out there because more money in their pocket means they spend more, which continues to help with the economy. So, yeah, fundamentally, which is really what drives long-term prices, fundamentally minimal changes. But for the most part, especially on the earnings side of things and the economy, everything is still looking solid, just like it did before the recent sell-off. I think there's two things playing into the sell-off. One, long overdue. Mm-hmm. So a lot of pent-up selling in there that people had been burned, not buying the dip before, waiting for a correction that didn't happen. Eventually they jump in and stay in, and they're like, man, I can't get out and try and time this anymore. Then once they finally see it kind of breach that 3% threshold, not that there's anything magic to it other than that's the lowest we sold off last year, 2.8, then they start saying, okay, maybe it's here. And then a very successful trade that has been going on for multiple years has been to go inverse the VIX, so going the opposite direction of volatility, and going long stocks. Well, the big institutions were so heavily into that, it appears as though there is a big, big unwinding process going on with that. We kind of saw it with the big day, first big sell-off day, in which some of those inverse VIX ETFs actually shut down trading for the rest of that day and didn't open until roughly midday the next day. They just aren't capable for those kind of rapid, volatile moves and that kind of volume that was going on. But those things, especially when it's institutions have such large dollars in position, they can't just decide that they're done with a strategy and sell it that day and they're out.
Right.
It takes a while. It takes a process. So it's a bit of a process. Also, anytime you have a correction, it's rare that you have a correction that lasts a couple of days and then you snap right back and the correction's done and over. It's very common to go back and retest the lows that you started with in the early process of that correction. before you finalize that whole correction process.
And, you know, I had this conversation earlier today that is this really a correction? I mean, if you go back to December 29th, the S&P was sitting at 2674. It closed on Tuesday at 2695. That's up 20 points. So is that really a correction? And you and I were kind of going back and forth on this a little bit. Yeah, what is the correction? Because it's just sort of some technical, mythical idea that 10% is this correction air territory. So certainly from the very top, when we ran up in January to where we are today, I guess you could say it was a correction. But when you just flash back, you know, a month and a week or so, it really is not.
Yeah, exactly. It's a 10% correction off of the highs we hit early this year. But this year started out with a bang in which we went up three consecutive weeks and had strong momentum, one of the best Januaries we'd ever had, at least at the three-week point before that. So, yeah, I think the thing to keep in perspective for everybody is to realize this. Look, you really haven't given back any of your gains you got last year. So last year was a very strong year. Most of the major indices up around 20% for 2017. You haven't really given any of that back. For the most part, the market has moved back to flat for this year. Depending on which index you look at, you may be a little bit underwater or you may be just barely above water. But really, all you've done is given up the January gains that we had this year. And they were a little bit outsized and a little bit above what was expected, given where we started the year at.
You know, folks, corrections, they're considered natural, normal, and healthy until they actually happen. And then people freak out. It's a little bit like getting sick when you're a kid. It's actually normal and it's natural, and it actually is building long-term healthy immunities to your body. But until it happens and you get sick, you know, you really don't like it. I mean, it's just the way it goes. So one thing too, Rod, I was telling Glass on Wednesday that when you try to explain why the market's doing what it's doing, I told him it's a little bit like trying to explain why gas prices are moving. I mean, obviously, we think, you know, we say, we repeat what other people say, we kind of guess. But at the end of the day, we, like you said, we were just due a reality check. I mean, this thing was pretty well overbought. You knew it was. I mean, but these things can carry on for a while. That's why there's people would say, well, if you knew, then why didn't you get out? Well, because we've been around a long time, and we know that the money that's in the market, it can be sort of irrational and look kind of crazy on the charts and be a little bit pricey, and that can continue for a long time. So again, we more so focus on what's the purpose of this money? When is it that you will need it? And if the money's in the equity market and you were planning on using it for a down payment on a home this month, that was stupid. You were supposed to have long-term money in stocks, not short-term money. And what's long-term? A little different for everybody, depending on their risk level. But, you know, 10 years, maybe 15 if you're more conservative. That's why we've preached this, you know, money I'm going to need now needs to be in the bank. Money I might need sooner than later needs to be in, you know, laddered bonds or a fixed annuity or something that's more stable. Money I don't need for a long time, that's the money that can be, you know, invested in the market like it is now. So, Rod, I think it comes back to, you know, understanding that it is normal, it is healthy. Until it actually happens, people don't really start talking about it. And that volatility, even though it spiked up to, I think I saw when I left the office today, around 33 from a low of 8, which is a big, big move. Normally, we're in that, 15 range or so in volatility. So we're a little bit highly volatile right now, but, you know, we've been there before.
Yeah, exactly. And you bring up a great point, Dave. We are not traders. We are long-term investors for our clients. So that's why we don't make trades based on short-term potential corrections. So, yeah, we can anticipate that the market is due for a short-term correction, but you never know what that is. Is it 3%? Is it 5%? Is it the magic 10% that everybody always says, oh, when you hit 10%, that's when you've hit correction levels? Well, we're not trying to time those things, so that's why we wouldn't necessarily take action if we believe there's a short-term correction coming, because for the equity side, it's long-term dollars. It's that 10, 15, 20-year bucket. We're not trying to time the short-term. Where we make moves in the equity side is when we see something in the fundamentals that have changed that make us want to lighten our exposure to equities. We see a potential recession. We see deterioration in earnings or revenue across the board, not just a couple of companies, but you start seeing it being very widespread. earnings. Last time we checked, I haven't seen the numbers yet for this week as earnings have come out. But at the end of last week, you're about halfway through earnings season on the S&P 500, and over 80% of the companies have beat both on the top and bottom line. So, hey, earnings, which is what drives our stock picking long term, still look good, still where you want to be. So, yeah, that's why we're not trying to go in and out based on short-term things. We still believe we're in a cyclical bull market. We've said that for a while. We don't think this correction or anything that's going on right now changes that, which is why we would suggest people not make any massive changes, because we've all of a sudden got volatility. This really is a more normal market. People just kind of forgot that because volatility basically went away and all we did was go up.
Yeah, and no one cares about volatility when it's that low and going up. Real quick, before we take a quick break, we'll have you on for one more break. I mean, we still have, as I talked about, still have tailwinds that are still in force. We have solid global growth. We have accelerating domestic activity, capital spending improvements that really haven't even kicked in, incomes that are jumping that we're just now starting to see, both from tax reform and also just wage pressure. I mean, the list goes on. So, yeah, I mean, the market, as Rod has mentioned, isn't maybe yet oversold, but the conditions can be reached very, very quickly, and this thing can turn, and that's why you aren't a trader. But when we come back, we'll talk about some of the things you can do right now to maybe take advantage of what's happening and not run for the doors. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, Hot Rod. Before you came on, I was telling people that I was like a very well-known quarterback, not at all close to playing like him, from the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers. And a couple of years ago, when things weren't going quite right, remember what he said? Just relax. R-E-L-A-X.
Yep.
Just relax. Well, that's what we've been telling people here. And something else, too, I thought I would mention. It is human nature. There's a lot of studies been done on this. It's human nature that we hate losses two times more than we appreciate or like gains. And as we enter the Olympics, I think the opening ceremonies are Friday night. But as we enter the Olympics and you start seeing people that are up on the podium and you think about, you know, winning, who's the happiest person on that podium? It's the gold medal winner, right? That's the happiest person. Who's the second most happy? It's the bronze, because they snuck their way on that podium. Who's the maddest? Who hates it the most? It's the silver. Because you hate losing two times more than winning. And I can tell you that, Rod, you coach kids, I've coached kids. If you can find a kid that will implement that mentality that I hate to lose more than I even care about winning, you're going to have a winner on your hands. So I'm just telling you, it's human nature that we hate losing more than we enjoy winning. So when you see declines, don't do what people have done in the past and treat it, gosh. I always say this, why is it that stocks and real estate are the only two things that we want to buy more of and more of when it goes up, but when it starts to go down, we want to run for the doors? You know, I always say it's like being over at the department store and they go on sale, a bunch of clothes go on sale, people go in, they don't go out. Well, think about this. Now, I'm not saying stocks are on sale, they're certainly not super cheap still, but Rod, one of the founding principles of asset management is rebalancing. And we've talked recently in the last year or two that it's one of the most counterintuitive things you do as an investor, that when one thing goes up or one thing goes down in this case, and one thing maybe stays a little more steady, that you might consider pressing the rebalance button, which would simply take some of the money that's over more on the fixed side and allocate it more to the equity side. And I'm not suggesting everyone goes out and do this, because here's the problem. You may have lost on both sides of that so far. In the short run, it's not uncommon when you have good news equals bad news in the market that interest rates go up because of the expected growth that's coming to the market, the expected inflation. Well, what happens when interest rates go up? Bond values go down. Now, we've been fortunate that this is kind of technical, but credit spreads have tightened to kind of get rid of a lot of that. But if you have, let's say, and this is, again, a little too technical, but let's say that your bonds have what's called a duration of 7. Now, duration is the measurement of interest rate sensitivity. So if you own bonds or bond funds, it might be worth checking to see what your duration is, D-U-R-A-T-I-O-N, duration. If the market moved 1%, if the interest rates move 1%, let's say on the 10-year treasury, then your values will change 7%. Now, if you're earning 4 in interest, that by the end of the year you would have been a net down 3. But what's happened, rates have jumped on the 10-year from about 220, 230 up to almost, what's it at now, Rod, 280, 288 when I left the office today?
Yeah, a little over 280.
So call that a half a percent move. So if your duration is 7, then you would likely see your values drop in a very quick time, about 3.5%. Now, that may not be true because, again, the tightening that I talked about earlier. So if you go in to press the rebalance button, you might be a little bit surprised, Hot Rod, you wouldn't be, that they might be down on both sides, which is a little bit normal when you go through a correction or moving stock values based on positive news. But that stuff tends to work itself out. So I would just be aware that, hey, I might start doing a little bit of rebalancing here. Now, we may still have more to go, but do maybe a little bit. And that's assuming that you did it last time when I told you, which was taking some chips off the table by rebalancing back the other way. And why I say it's the most counterintuitive thing, and you know this, it's hard to sell something when it's doing well or has done well, to put it somewhere that was flat for the year. I mean, bonds, for the most part, didn't do anything last year. So why would I put money there? Well, it's a place to park money, a way to rebalance, a way to manage your risk, and that's all I'm saying, Rod. So I wanted to get your comments on that.
Yeah, it's one of those. Number one, those two asset classes have been very correlated for a long, long time.
Yes,
so
it's been troubling, a little troubling.
Up, bonds were going up.
Yeah.
When stocks are going down, bonds have been going down. So, yeah, they have been very correlated, which is another reason why people are saying, hey, don't get too caught up in the short-term movement of either the rates or the equity market on that. The other thing, like you talked about, the psychology of it. Yeah, everybody's been predicting the sell-off and the correction, and a lot of people had shopping lists and were ready to buy. Well, as soon as you get that correction that you've been anticipating and saying, it's going to happen, then you begin to think, uh-oh, there's something worse going on here. This is more than just a normal correction that I have been anticipating and waiting for. So then all of a sudden you're afraid to pull the trigger, and you don't invest until all of a sudden the market goes back up, the correction's over, things are on their way up. So, yeah, what you really have to do is you have to stick to a game plan and implement a game plan that makes the most sense for what the purpose of the money is, mm-hmm. what the time horizon for that money is, and eliminate the emotions. Because when things are going down, even though you said, we're due a correction and I'm going to buy these stocks when they get down to this level, when that typically happens, now all of a sudden you get nervous and you have fear take over and you don't want to buy. Same thing happens on the opposite end. When your stocks are way up, you think, they may be a little overvalued. It may be time to sell. Well, greed kicks in and goes, gosh, if I make 20%, right, maybe I can make 40%. So you just hold on and ride that out. And that's not the way to make your investments based on fear and greed. It's got to be more systematic. It's got to be more of a system that says, F this, then this, and ride that out and understand the markets go up, the markets go down, but if you have the appropriate allocation for the purpose of your money and the time horizon, long term, you should come out just fine.
Rod, one of the things I wanted to clarify just a little bit before we let you go, I think people kind of get the market, the stock market goes up and down and kind of based on this and that or whatever. But bond prices tend to be a little bit mystical to some of our clients, and we've noticed that. And to me, bonds are pretty simple. You have a face amount that you get paid interest on. It matures, that's when you get the money back, and the interest goes into the cash account. But the change in value between those two points, from the day you buy it to the day it matures, that can change on three basic situations. One would be changes in interest rates. Two, changes in perceived credit risk. And then the third one is based on just supply and demand. I mean, how much supply is out there, how much demand. And we personally believe that where rates are will probably stick about there. And then we wouldn't even be surprised if they went back down. Because when you look globally, not just domestic, globally, and you look at the U.S. market and you say, okay, you mean I can buy a 10-year bond from the United States government? I know they're bankrupt, but, so is everyone else in the world, except for maybe a couple countries. I can buy a bond from them that's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government and the people and I can get 2.8%, and I'm sitting in Germany thinking I could buy my own German bond and make 0.3, or I could be in Japan and get paid nothing. I might be willing to put money there. And there's a lot of money around the globe, especially as the currencies have been coming a little more on par, that I can see continuing to flow into the U.S., which could keep rates down and, you know, not freak people out about rates jumping up to, you know, whatever, and my bond values tanking. So I think you own bonds for a particular reason. The prices can change based on moves in interest rates, perceived credit risk, you know, supply and demand, and some other reasons too. But right at the end of the day, it's good to have both. And depending on your age and stage of life, like you said, the purpose of your money, when you plan to use it, it's good to have both because that keeps the good balance in place. If you're, you know, it's, I always say, you know, it's like investing in investment allocation, and like you said, it's pretty darn correlated right now, and it has been for quite some time. But ideally, it would be like the pistons in your car, you know, when you kind of envision those pistons going up and down, but your car's going forward, you know, that would be a great, well-constructed portfolio. So, Hot Rod, bonds are still okay. They're boring, but they're still okay.
Yeah, they most certainly are, and there's a reason to own them. Now, for a long time, we've been in a bond bull market to where you could make money on bonds through appreciation and the interest you collected. Now the reason to own bonds is to protect the principal and to still collect that interest. Now, I've said that to some people, and some people have looked at me and said, well, wait a minute, I don't understand. Why is a bond that fluctuates better at protecting principal than stocks that fluctuate as well? Well, the biggest thing, difference right there is there's a maturity date. There is no maturity date on your stock. There's no set date 10 years, 20 years down the road that McDonald's or Walmart or any other stock is going to give you a certain price on that stock. But in the bond, as long as credit quality and they are still alive and kicking is there, you know exactly how much you're going to get on a specific date in the future. That's why bonds are there for principal protection, and that's why you should be owning bonds in this environment, even though rates are potentially going to continue to creep up. And as you said before, we probably have seen a short-term peak in bonds only because demand is not waning at all. There is still huge demand for government bonds, which will eventually either put a cap on the rates that we're at now or may even push the rates back down a little bit. We're going way down. I don't expect to see us back down at the lows of 1.4 on the 10-year, but you probably would see a little bit of a sell-off in that yield at some point. But, yeah, they're still a worthwhile piece to own in your portfolio. It's just not for appreciation. It's for interest income, and it's for protection of principal.
Hot Rod Holloway, folks. He's the equity portfolio manager over at CFCI. And, Rod, you do remember Aaron Rodgers saying relax, right?
Oh, yeah, most certainly, and it was great advice because, hey, they came back, they had a great season, they made the playoffs. It's the same thing here. And patience is one of the hardest things to have in the investing game. So you hear a lot of people talk about it, sit on your hands. And sometimes that's what you have to do. Just sit on your hands. Don't get itchy to hit that buy or sell button. Just sit on your hands. Allow the strategy to work itself out over the long haul. Now, of course, if you got a little greedy, and you've got too much equity exposure because you thought the market would never go down, then you may want to reallocate. But as long as you've got the appropriate asset allocation that makes sense for what you're trying to achieve, then these things are just short-term noise that don't have a long-term impact.
Rod, we'll see you in the morning. Thanks for all you do, and have a good rest of the night.
That sounds good. Have a great show, Dave. Talk to you tomorrow morning.
All right, man. We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, I'm going to talk about understanding annuities. It is a great and can be a really good risk management tool, but I think you need to understand them because, you know, they get some bad press here and there if you haven't noticed. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everybody. Hey, real quick, I have a good friend. His name's Marty James, and Marty is a CPA actually just up the road in Plainfield. He is in my Ed Slot Elite IRA Advisor Group, and I've known Marty since I started with the group. And what was really cool that Marty only lives up the road, 30 minutes plus, and I met him for the first time in Atlanta, Georgia at an Ed Slot event. So I don't know how I can describe Marty, but he's always got something going on where he thinks, he's really figured something out. So he texted me yesterday afternoon and said, hey, I've got something I want to bounce off of you. And I'm like, well, call me tonight about 6 o'clock. I'll be done. So I'm at home. I just get home, and the phone rings. I see it's Marty. I pick it up. He goes, hey, man, I got a good one. I have a good one here. I said, what is it? He goes, okay, here you go. If you can contribute to an IRA, and it's a deductible IRA, and you're in the 15% tax bracket. So if you're married and you're over 50, you can put $6,000 a piece in, right? $12,000. I mean, yeah, Marty, I know that. But here's the thing. Now they're only in the 12% bracket. So they could make the contribution for last year, save 15% tax, turn around and withdraw it, pay it only 12% on it, and make a 3% positive arbitrage on their IRA contribution. Isn't that cool? I said, Marty, that's like $300. He goes, $300. They made $300. I go, Marty, it's $300. Listen, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it for any client. I'm going to tell people on the show tomorrow about it because it is kind of cool, but I'm not doing it. If I told my brother Dan and Angela at my office who does paperwork and track things, hey, we're going to open up 150 IRAs so that they can deposit money and withdraw money so they can make this positive arbitrage of $300, they'd kill me. So I'm not doing it, but I wanted all of you to know that it was a possibility. All right, let's talk annuities. Annuities are issued by insurance companies. What does an insurance company do? They insure things. Love them, hate them, whatever, that's what they do. And when it comes to risk in your portfolio, you can either accept it, you can manage it, which we've talked about both of those things, or you can transfer it, and that's insurance. I'm just transferring the risk to an insurance company. Now, there's basically three, maybe four different types of annuities, and that's where people get confused. The press that you hear about annuities are bad, I hate annuities, is from the variable annuity area. Now, are they bad? Not necessarily. Is it worth the money? Maybe not always, but here's how they work. You put the money in, you buy sub-accounts that resemble mutual funds, and you can buy typically about whatever you want. They'll provide a guaranteed income stream if you want it, maybe a guaranteed death benefit if you need it, and all that costs something. So here's an example. Let's say I put $200,000 into a variable annuity, and I invested it, and the market crashed, and it was worth $150,000, and I died. My wife receives $200,000. So what's so bad about that? Now, if the market went up to $300,000 and I died, she gets $300,000 and we paid for some insurance that we didn't need. Or maybe there's some income protection where I hold the annuity for quite some time. Maybe they give me some guaranteed income benefit and I can take 5% for life. And even if it runs out of money, I still get my check. Well, that's not bad, right? But it costs money. I mean, I've said it before. It's not too good to be true. It's too good to be free. So think about it this way. Typically, when you buy a variable annuity, you're going to spend about 20% more to own it than you would if you just bought the investments on their own. Now, the 20% more may get you the death benefit, might give you some income protection. If you needed it and you used it and it benefited you, you probably thought, well, that's pretty good cost of insurance. But here's the best analogy, and I wrote about this in our book. I've said it here on the air. Can't think of a better analogy. I'm going on a cruise for spring break. I don't necessarily love cruises. I like cruises. I think it's a terrible family vacation because once your son gets on the cruise ship, you never see him again until bedtime. And usually I'm already asleep by the time he comes in, but they love it. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, what if there were two cruise ships and one cruise ship was identical to the other and everything was identical. The ports of call, the food, the entertainment, everything was identical except that instead of it being $1,000 a person, it's $1,200 a person. What's the difference between that ship and that ship? Well, you might think, well, I would take the $1,000 ship, not the $1,200 if it's all the same. Well, there's just one little difference. The one that costs $1,200 does have lifeboats on it. And you might say, huh, lifeboats. Yeah, I think I'll pay the extra $200 just in case it sinks and I need the lifeboats. Now, for most people, they might say, well, you know what? I'm not paying the extra $200 because I haven't seen a cruise ship sink maybe in a long time. It could be since the Titanic. I'm not sure. But that's the that's what you have to get across to yourself is that it does cost something. There is a benefit if you use it. Now, the other one that we've used more are like indexed annuities or buffer annuities. Most of them have no fees, which we really like. They can offer you upside potential on the market with either 100% downside protection or some percentage downside protection. a popular one that I've used lately where you can get in the market and maybe you want to be in for 6 years, the S&P 500. And the S&P cap is 80% on your money. So I put $100,000 in. The most I can get back is $180,000 over 6 years. Not bad. But if the market went down, let's say 10%, it wipes out all of my losses. That's pretty cool. If it goes down 12%, I accept 2% loss. So there's different types of products out there. Now, this has no fee. There are surrender charges. If you take it all out early, you're going to pay an early withdrawal penalty. But you know exactly what you have, exactly what it's going to do. And you can buy some that have 100% protection too, and you don't get as much gain, but, you know, it protects more of your money. And then you have the traditional just fixed annuities, where, again, it's like I always say this, Doug says it too, that a fixed annuity is to an insurance company what a CD is to a bank. I put money on deposit with the insurance company. They pay me a fixed interest rate. Right now, you know, 3 year, 5 year for a you know, A rated company, you're going to get 2.5 to maybe 2.8% on that money. Not bad, better than CDs, right? Tax deferred if it's not in an IRA, it's already tax deferred if it is in an IRA. But they don't cost anything, and they're just good short term places to park money. And then you have immediate annuities, which we're not going to talk about because I don't have time. But that's the different types of annuities. So when you lump annuities all in together, it's wrong. I think you have to differentiate between the different types of annuities, what they do, what you might want out of them, and then make a good educated decision. Don't just hear the word, I hate annuities, or annuities stink, annuities are too expensive, and you just discard them. I think that's bad. I think you should be open-minded and know that you can use these as a risk management tool. Like an example, if I'm buying a fixed annuity that has a fixed interest rate of 2.5% for the next 5 years, and I know it's not in the market moving up and down, is that maybe better than buying a short-term bond? Possibly. So that's the way you think of it. And I don't pay any fees. I mean, golly, that's not a bad idea. So I just want you to be open-minded about it. I want you to ask questions about it. I mean, if you certainly have questions, we're always here to answer those as well. But we want you to be educated and not be down on things you certainly aren't up on. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, I got a whole bunch of stuff to go over. I doubt I have enough time to cover it. But did you like the analogy about who's the happiest and who's the next happiest on the podium at the Olympics? We'll maybe go over that again when I get back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, someone this week said, how long does it take you to prepare for the show? And I was like, well, you know, I actually sat down on Tuesday mornings and spent about an hour and a half just getting my outlines together, getting my talking points put together. But then, you know, throughout the week, I gather things and think of things and collect things and use it for the show. So I really don't know. But whenever I ran across this thing about how we hate loss 2% more than we like gains, or 2% more of us hate losing a ball game than we actually enjoy winning a game. Ask the Super Bowl winners. I mean, there's a pit in their stomach today that will last their entire life. I mean, I've lost sectional championship games before. I'm 48 years old, 30 years removed from that Zionsville game, who, by the way, ended up winning the state championship that year. It still hurts. It never goes away. But some of the wins, unless it was maybe a Super Bowl, a state championship, or some, you know, come from behind underdog sectional basketball win when we still had single class basketball, you know, I'm thinking that the losses hurt more than the gains. And I thought, you know what? It is true. You think about the podium there at the Olympics, the gold medal winner, man, they're jacked up. But who's the second most happiest? The bronze, because they crawled on there. The person's miserable is the guy in the middle or the gal in the middle who has the silver around their neck. So I think that's just the way we are wired. Hey, one last thing before we take our final break. I'm on Twitter, and you can follow me on Twitter if you like. But Ed Slott tweeted out something. He calls Roth IRAs tax insurance. Because once you're invested in one, you won't have to pay taxes on those contributions or earnings ever again. I thought that was kind of cool as we talked about insurance. You can either accept it, manage it, or transfer it. Well, if you're going to manage and transfer tax risk, it needs to be into a Roth IRA. All right, let's take a quick break. Yeah, let's take one last break when we come back. I was quoting a couple of articles this past week that they came out. I wanted to share them with you and kind of laugh with you, because one person that I actually describe and talk about in the article was someone that you know very, very well. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right. So, you know, you can go to our website, cfci.us, and you can see the articles that that I've been quoted in. Some of the guys at the office have been quoted in recently. So we have some momentum in the national media, and there was something that came from Retire Ahead from a Tribune Online magazine. It's really a neat-looking magazine, or a, what do we call it, a brochure, a pamphlet, I don't know what you want to call it, newsletter. But we were talking about leaving a legacy, and, you know, we've talked about that on the show. And we talked about, in this article, they asked me what I thought about, you know, how much to leave, or should, you know, what about leaving not too much to your heirs. And they quoted me, and you guys have heard me say this, the sea of change in attitudes about leaving money to adult offspring may be generational, says David Hayes, president of Conference Financial. We actually did a program called Leaving a Legacy and focused on the differences in the ways generations view legacy planning, Hayes said. The children of the Depression viewed inheritance as a financial transfer. They would go without to make sure that their money was left over to their kids. Now, what you're seeing with the baby boomers is more of a transition to leaving values, traditions, memories, celebrations, favorite stories, family trips, reunions, and spending money to create experiences you'll talk about for a long time. I thought that was kind of cool. And then lastly, quoted in the IBD Weekly, the title was Recruit a Range of Experts to Wow Clients. I think the title's terrible, but anyway, and I'm quoted in here. It says that Hayes, we hired someone called the Director of First Impressions, and the job was to make us look good in the eyes of clients, prospects, and the community. The role entailed everything from managing additional outreach to buying gifts for prospects, hand-delivering gifts to clients' homes, and even at times dressing up as Santa Claus. Now, I laughed about this because this is Jim Inman. This is what Jim did for us when he worked for us years ago. And it's right. Back when we were smaller, we did some things that we can't really do now. But Jim would dress up as Santa, and that spearheaded his career as being a certified Santa's helper. So you see Jim dressed up in that Santa's outfit, and that's because he started doing Santa Claus at our office a long time ago. So we went on to say, Hayes said, the ideal director of first impression needs to possess both marketing and skills and charisma and charm to be able to go to community events and create immediate bonds. The person also needs to be detail-oriented so that they are well-organized. And I said, you look for people who are gregarious, likable, very sociable. They don't need to have a financial background, but they need to be warm, they need to be caring, and they have to have a working knowledge of the community. So I sent that to Jim Inman and said, hey, brother, you made the IBD, not by name, but in spirit for sure. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed the show. Can't wait to be back next week. We have so much to talk about. Have a great week. I'll be down at the Semi-States in Evansville rooting on a bunch of wrestlers, and hopefully we report back. Some of them go on to state. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.